Thank you for your attention. So I'm Dan Gibbons. I'm the CEO of the City Club of Chicago. And thank you very much, Lester McKeever, one of our favorites. Thank you for your attention. I always hate to break up the conversation, but we can get back to it in just a minute. Welcome to City Club, everybody. A lot of great energy in this room, and we would not be here, of course, were it not for our sponsors, one of those being an institution that so many of you have heard of. It's called Loyola University Chicago. So, and I'd like to make a very special thank you to Phil Hale. Phil, Phil has helped, along with Loyola, but really Phil has helped elevate City Club, especially over many years, but especially as we've reimagined it over these past few years. Phil was one of the first people that I went to and had lunch with, and got some great ideas, and his passion for the city, for civic engagement, and of course for Loyola is unmatched. Thank you, Phil, for pulling all this together. Thank you for your commitment to City Club and to the city of Chicago. It's very much appreciated. And part of that reimagination has also been to engage the next generation of leaders, and Loyola has been a big piece of that as well. Jim Flavin and the Ramblers Brotherhood have been a big part of that, as they've attended so many programs and engaged in the conversations. There are so many great future leaders here that are always a part of City Club now, so we very much appreciate that. Thank you, Jim, and thank you to the Ramblers Brotherhood. MPEA is also here and a sponsor. Thank you, Loretta Clark, who's been a little busy these last couple of weeks. Strategia Consulting and Lisa Dross. Lisa, where are you? Thank you for your sponsorship as well. I'll ask you all, we've got a few more acknowledgments, but as you prepare for the discussion, please, there are blue pieces of paper on your table. Please locate those and feel free to write out a few questions. Omar Brown, a Loyola board member and Big Ten big wig, is going to be leading our discussion today with Dr. Reed, and we'll be sure to get him those questions before and even during the conversation. And as you enjoy your lunch, I just want to acknowledge a few more people that are here, because we have some incredible folks joining us. Attorney General Kwame Raoul is here. Sheriff Tom Dart is with us. Sheriff Dart. I believe, although I haven't seen her, Comptroller Susana Mendoza is on her way. Illinois Senate President Don Harmon. They must be in the same car, but I know they're coming. All the elected officials, there's so many elected officials. Phil always, and Loyola always fill the room with so many great people. Could anyone who's elected or maybe has formally held an elective office please stand for a moment? I know you can do that if you're able. Thank you. I see aldermen. I see state senators. I see state representatives. I believe a county commissioner. Thank you all for being here. And so many people affiliated with Loyola. Kevin Willer, who's a great friend to the City Club, is here and a Loyola board member. Thank you, Kevin. Another board member, Melody Span Cooper, is here. Melody was a great partner to the City Club recently during our Convention Week Hub with WVON. We hosted all sorts of amazing conversations in a new concept that the City Club took up over a couple weeks ago. And speaking of that convention week, congratulations and hello to Christy George, another Loyola Law School grad, right? Smita Shaw is here, who I believe is a chair of the Council of Regents for Loyola. Any other Loyola board members who are here? Could I ask you to stand? I'm not sure if I... Thank you. And I see Father Pat McGrath, Bob Sullivan, and I see Father Pat McGrath, who was my teacher when he was a Jesuit in training, and I know I missed a few of his classes, which has been the butt of a couple of jokes, but somehow I survived that. So it is great to be among so many Jesuit-educated leaders and friends of the Jesuit tradition. It's no coincidence that there are so many public servants who share that Ignatian value of being men and women for others. And as we also enjoy our lunch today, I do want to take a moment just to acknowledge that personally, I learned this morning that my Aunt Janet Joyce died suddenly. And thank you. Janet taught thousands of Southside kids over the course of her career as a teacher. And she was also the wife of my Uncle Jim, who was a firefighter turned eventually commissioner of the Chicago Fire Department. And that's public service to me and to my family. And on top of that, she was a saint of a woman. So as we enjoy our lunch, I'd love for you to all think about maybe your favorite teacher, or maybe your aunt or uncle who have taken up public service, because there's so many amazing people out there. And please, when you go out about your business today and tomorrow and the next day, say thank you to them, because there's a lot of people out there that, so many of us in the room also, who have done so much great for this city. And please, I'd invite you to enjoy your lunch, but keep that in mind as this city functions on the backs of so many incredible public servants. Thank you for your attention. We're going to get our program underway. And I'd like to start by mentioning, you all see these coasters. These are not City Club's coasters. I'll use it to get attention. You're welcome to use these today for your water or your Coke or your iced tea, but Phil asked me to mention that you're all welcome to take them home as well. I understand there are a lot of folks affiliated with Loyola or perhaps another Jesuit institution. Take these home and put them on your desk. And while City Club is non-biased and non-partisan, I'll fill you in on a little secret. If I could please get your attention, we'd like to get this underway so we can hear from Dr. Reed. As I mentioned, City Club, non-biased, non-partisan, but I'll let you in on a personal secret that AMDG has been part of my password for anything starting with my first email from St. Ignatius College Prep to Marquette, and of course through my time at Loyola's Rome Center. So it really is my honor to welcome and introduce today's featured speaker. Dr. Mark Reed is new to Chicago, but he is far from new to leadership roles in higher education. Most recently as the president of St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. We're very fortunate to have him leading Loyola University Chicago. As we all know, Chicago is the greatest city in the world, and so much of that is due to our world-class education institutions. They are integral to our success as a city and our region, from business attraction and workforce development to civic engagement, research and cultural contributions, and of course public service, as we mentioned. Loyola has 6 campuses in the Chicago area, and of course that one amazing campus in Rome that I highly recommend everyone visit if you haven't been. Dr. Reed has taken on this incredible task of leading this historic institution and its almost 20,000 students into the next generation. So we look forward to hearing more about his vision and his plans, which will be covered in a conversation, as I mentioned, with Omar Brown from the Big Ten, and also, of course, a Loyola board member who will join Dr. Reed on stage in just a moment. As he lays these plans out, on behalf of City Club, we are committed as City Club to help you, Dr. Reed, along the way as you further engage in our civic community. And so I'd like for you all to join me in welcoming to City Club Loyola University of Chicago's 25th president, Dr. Mark Reed. Welcome, Dr. Reed.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you, Dan, in particular, for the kind introduction. I'm very happy to be here at the City Club. This was actually one of the first venues that I came to after I started at Loyola in October of 2022. I remarked to Tom Dart, he was actually the first person of significance in Chicagoland that I heard speak. And I thought, if I ever have to come and speak to this club, I have very big shoes to fill. I learned a lot that day, as I'm sure everybody else did as well. But I'm happy to offer just some brief remarks and then really look forward to the Q&A with Omar Brown, one of our proud alumni and current trustee. Now, since this is a pro-Loyola crowd, a Loyola-friendly crowd, as you might say, the next few things I'm going to say you probably already know, but I think it's good to remind ourselves of it. And for those who are less familiar with Loyola, it's a chance to know a little bit about us. You know, we were founded in 1870. We were founded to serve an immigrant community that was underserved and needed to grow, needed to develop, and was looking for social mobility opportunities. That's why we exist. And you heard that we now today have 6 campuses, 5 of which are in the greater Chicago area, the Water Tower campus at the north end of Michigan Avenue, Lakeshore campus at Rogers Park, the Health Sciences campus, which we share with Loyola University Medical Center in Maywood. We have the Loyola Retreat and Ecology Center, which is in Woodstock, Illinois, and we have Cuneo Mansion and Gardens, which are in Vernon Hills. And you are all cordially invited to visit the Rome Center anytime you have the opportunity. It's fantastic. We're one of 27 Jesuit colleges and universities in the United States. We're one of the largest and the most complex Jesuit institutions in the world. And Jesuit educational institutions comprise the broadest and largest educational network and association in the history of the world. That's important. That's an important fact because it connects us and tells us what we are all part of, something much bigger than ourselves. Now, Loyola University Chicago, that's our name. Chicago is not an add-on adjective. It is part and parcel to who and what we are. Chicago defines us, and being founded in 1870, it is not a stretch to say that we grew up with the city of Chicago. So Chicago's history is our history, and Loyola's history is Chicago's history. Now, at Loyola today, we have 13 colleges and universities that range from the traditional schools you might find, the College of Arts and Sciences, Quinlan School of Business, to the law school, to the medical school, to schools that are innovative and new and distinctive, like the School of Environmental Sustainability, and everything in between. Loyola has more than 4,000 employees. It has 17,000 students. It's not a small little institution at the north end of Chicago or at the north end of Michigan Avenue. It's much, much bigger than that. Loyola is strong, fortunately. We're strong in the sense that we enjoy tremendous demand from prospective students. That's not an insignificant thing today. For those who know a lot about higher education, you know what a competitive marketplace it is out there. And to have more than 40,000 applicants for your incoming first-year student class is a wonderful thing to have for 2,800 slots. And if you think that's good, try applying to the Stritch School of Medicine. They have more than 12,000 applications for 170 slots. We need to do something about that. We need to find a way to increase more opportunities for so many qualified and deserving people who want to go to medical school. The finances of Loyola University Chicago are strong, whether it's the rating agencies' views of us, whether it's measured by endowment, whether it's measured by annual operating performance and consistent, steady results that enable us to reinvest. Loyola is strong. And if those two things aren't good enough, we always can turn to Sister Jean, and she seems to bail us out of almost any challenge we might ever have. So I mentioned that Loyola is an anchor institution. It's a significant driver of the regional economy, whether that be through economic development, opportunities, and facilitating connections for global networking, as well as neighborhood revitalization. Loyola has educated generations of leaders in Chicago. Today, alumni populate critical roles in business and law, government and medicine, and many other fields. I know the crowd I'm talking to because many of you are in this room. I can hardly go anywhere for Loyola events or social events with my family and get into a conversation and not have somebody tell me that they themselves or they know someone who graduated from Loyola University Chicago. Loyola alumni permeate the city of Chicago and increasingly permeate other regions of the country as well. Now, I think what makes Loyola special, what makes Loyola have the staying power that it does and the impact that it has, and what more broadly can be said about Jesuit higher education or even secondary education, the secret sauce is that Jesuit education both stays the same and it evolves to meet the needs of the challenges of the day. It has stayed the same for nearly 500 years in many respects. That's when it was first founded. And Loyola's been here now for more than 150. So we haven't even been around for half the length of time that Jesuit education has been in existence. So there's a lot of staying power with that. How many companies, how many organizations, how many governments, how many countries can say that they have been around for that long? Okay, so there's something about it. And stability and core principles are important. But of course, if you only stay in that lane, you become obsolete so quickly. So what are some of those core tenets? Obviously, a commitment to liberal arts undergraduate education. Maybe that thing that our undergraduates from time to time go, really, do I have to take courses in this, that, or the other thing? I'm teaching a class this semester, so I have some students in applied calculus twice a week, and I guarantee you some of them are wondering, how is this going to relate to anything I am going to do in life? Of course, we point out that it is and how it is going to do that. But courses in philosophy and history and social science and English literature, these form incredibly well-educated, well-rounded critical thinkers, writers, communicators, no matter what their majors and disciplines are. It's a non-negotiable for us. It has been for hundreds of years, and it will be for the next few hundred years as well. We care deeply, obviously, about the formation of individual students, but also our faculty staff, and we continue that care about the formation of our alumni, who they are, what they become, and how best can the institution serve them to help them achieve their ultimate goals and objectives. Our faculty, no matter how engaged they are in their research activity, also teach. They teach undergraduate students. They teach graduate students. This defines us. It's a very high-touch environment. I could go on and on, of course. But also, we evolve, we change, and we do things that were unthinkable 500 years ago, that certainly were unthinkable 154 years ago when we were founded, and in some cases were unthinkable 10 to 20 years ago. A few examples of that, we have become a Great Lakes leader in applied approaches to sustainability and environmental equity through our School of Environmental Sustainability. It's been said, and this may come up in Q&A, Loyola's been doing things to support the environment and sustainability before it ever really was labeled that, and before it became kind of the cool thing or the must thing to have to do. We have interdisciplinary centers such as the Institute for Racial Justice and the Baumhart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. These are hubs of scholars and practitioners sharing high-level research on urgent issues and facilitating community collaborations to address them. Our law school has a very interesting initiative and timely initiative now dealing with the tough issues of immigration and issues at our border. And what are the legal implications of all of this? We know what the political implications are. They seek to go below that and actually address those core issues at a human level and a practical level. Our medical school was the first in the United States in recent years to openly admit undocumented students, DACA students, if you will, and through partnerships with people like Senator Durbin, figuring out ways to make that financially possible. And we've had over 40 students graduate from the Stritch School of Medicine who are undocumented and otherwise never would have become medical doctors and contributing physicians in our country. And one final example, but certainly not least, Arupe College, and the dean of Arupe College, Father Connell, is here. Arupe College is in its 10th year of operation. And about 10 years ago or so, one of my predecessors, Father Mike Garanzini, thought Loyola today, or Loyola then, so very different than it was in 1870. What if we went back to some of those foundational roots and why we were founded in 1870? Again, to serve an immigrant population, to serve a first-generation population, to serve an underserved population. And what is needed? And what is needed, and what Loyola determined at that time, was to do something that hadn't been done before, which was to launch a 2-year associate's degree school within a larger research university. And by the way, that's a private university doing it, not a public institution. And Arupe College today can point to tremendous results and outcomes for our students, most of whom go on ultimately to complete their bachelor's degree. Increasingly, more are doing it at Loyola. Others are transferring to some of the best colleges and universities in the United States, and others are staying right here in Chicago, going to some of our finest public institutions as well. Those are the kinds of things that enable us to not only be true to who we are, be stable, have sustainability, but also adapt to the needs and reflect the opportunities and the challenges of today. So ultimately, and I'll conclude with these thoughts, Loyola, of course, seeks to educate its students in a way that provides them with credentials and knowledge and information and skills, all the things that they need to go out, secure their first jobs, and ultimately to advance in their career. But we do it with a greater focus on education for a purpose. We're committed, of course, to the discovery and the transmission of knowledge. But reflecting our Jesuit and Catholic heritage and our founding roots, we seek to integrate that excellence with religious commitment, no matter what that religious commitment might mean for any individual person. And we do that to both form and inform our students. A great tagline we like to use, and I know it's not original, others may use it as well, but I think it sums up Loyola and it sums up Jesuit education, is we want our students to leave us wanting the same good things for others that they want for themselves. Think about that for a moment. In other words, the education that they receive from us ultimately isn't just for them. It's for them to go out and to do something to contribute to the greater good of their communities, their lives, their families, society, our country, our world. We want them to know how to think, but we don't teach them what to think. So that's ultimately why we exist. And so finally, I had the tremendous good fortune to travel with a delegation and members of our Board of Trustees and members of the senior administration, a few of whom who are here in this room, so they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And we were in Spain and Rome for 10 days in May, and we were following the history of Jesuit education, the life of St. Ignatius, and during our time in Rome, we were able to have a private audience with Pope Francis. And we really didn't know what to expect, but we had a private audience. We were ushered into a private room, sat down, and Pope Francis came in, and he gave us an address. And he laughed with us, joked with us. He wouldn't let us leave until we had a group picture. Everybody had an opportunity to interact with him. But in his address, a little passage has stood out to me. And so I'll end with these remarks, and we'll transition to the Q&A. He was challenging us as leaders of Loyola University Chicago to remind ourselves that education is not just a transmission of knowledge, but a commitment and a method of forming people who are able to embody the values of reconciliation and justice in every aspect of their lives. The mind must be formed so that the heart can be generous, able to engage with reality and the demands of the times, and the hands must be able to work actively. That's quite a challenge. It's quite a responsibility, but frankly, it's quite a privilege. And so thank you for your attention, and I look forward to the conversation. Does it matter?
All right. Yes.
All right.
Yes, is my mic on? It's on. All right. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Hello, hello. All right. Thank you, President Reed, for your remarks. As a Loyola MBA, I do appreciate how integrity and ethics is woven into the research and the teachings, and it's something I take with me every day.
Yeah.
So let's get started. President Reed, you are a successful educational leader and formerly president of St. Joseph University in your native Philadelphia. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how did it prepare you for Loyola?
Sure. Well, this is the part I absolutely hate talking about myself. But since you asked, I will follow directions and do it dutifully. So I am not a native Midwesterner. I'm not a native Chicagoan. I was born and raised in Philadelphia and lived my entire life on the East Coast. But I spent about 20 years in Connecticut and Boston before returning to Philadelphia in 2015 to be president at St. Joseph's. And during that time, I spent considerable years at Fairfield University. And so the common theme there is this is the third Jesuit institution now that I've had the privilege to work at, and it's the second that I've had the opportunity to serve as president. Like a lot of college students, Omar, I graduated not fully knowing what I wanted to do with my life. I had a job offer with a leading consulting firm that I put on hold for a year. I thought about law school, but I decided to do a service program for a year and teach. And I taught high school students, and I absolutely loved it. And I guess you could say I never looked back. You know, I would say a couple of additional things that coming to Loyola. I first stepped foot on the campus probably around 2004. I'd have to go back and really confirm that. But it was in the early 2000s, and I mentioned Father Mike Garanzini, who was president at the time. It was early in his presidency. And I had the opportunity to come back to Loyola for various meetings over the years and follow the growth and trajectory of this institution. And I also knew both of my predecessors, not just Father Mike, but also Joanne Rooney, because the Jesuit network, as I said, is an extensive one. And so when I arrived at Loyola, there were definitely more than one person who said, "You seem to know a lot about this place."
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you do your homework and you study your homework. And then I think the other thing that I would say is Loyola is a much bigger, much more complex place than my previous two institutions. But there's a lot of consistency there. And I had a great opportunity at my former institution to do something that, you know, not many people get a chance to do in their career, and that was we successfully conceived of and executed the acquisition of two other institutions of higher education. And when I got to Loyola, somebody said, "Are we going to take over another university?" I said, "Absolutely not." I said, "We have 13 schools and colleges. Maybe we should shed one or two, you know?" I'm kidding. Don't tweet that out. So, I was fortunate to have had a lot of different kinds of experiences that all kind of relate to what the job of the president is. And I've just been lucky.
Absolutely. So, President Reed, you've now lived in Chicago for about 2 years, and we are sitting in the City Club of Chicago, and I'm sure everybody wants to know. So what are your impressions of Chicago?
It's flat. I thought Philadelphia was a grid. It's a grid. It's flat. A couple of more funny, maybe, observations, and then a more serious one. You all like to talk about the weather a lot. Now, you can say the same things about native Philadelphians. We like to talk about, you know, how we're just as good as some of the other cities that we don't get enough credit for, or, you know, how our sports teams really are, you know, more gritty than everybody else. Now, what I will tell you about Chicago and what attracted me to Chicago, Omar, you know, I lived in the greater New York area for a long time. I did live in the Boston area. You know, these are, and Philadelphia, these are cities that matter. And Chicago is a city of substance and a city that matters. You know, it's not an exaggeration to say, and I hope I'm not insulting anyone when I say this, it's the New York of the Midwest. It's the capital of the Midwest. big things happen here. Yeah. And it didn't take me very long after arriving to realize that. And I continue to realize it every day.
Thank you. Yeah. So in recent years, Loyal has increased its research stature and global connections. Can you talk to us about how a tuition-driven university like Loyola sustains that growth in academic leadership, but also manages to maintain its core mission of access and attainment for students of all backgrounds?
Sure. It's not easy, and it's expensive. You know, I mentioned some of the facts about us, but maybe a few more facts would be relevant as well. You know, last year, in our last fiscal year that closed on June 30th, we distributed over $300 million in the form of financial aid to students. $300 million. It's a lot of money. Most of that, quote, unfunded, in the sense of it's straight discounts off of tuitions and the like. Certainly, we have endowed scholarships, and we have tremendous support through Pell Grants, MAP Grants, in particular to Illinois. But you have to make the investments. That's how you do it. And you have to make the place as accessible and affordable for as many students as you can. You know, 54% of our just entered freshman class identify as students of color. And we have, you know, in excess of 20% students who are Pell eligible. Those are some of the ways that we do it. But you have to run your institution in a manner that gives you that flexibility. You know, that common expression, no margin, no mission.
Yeah.
You know, Loyola 20-plus years ago decided it was going to do everything it could to never find itself in a precarious position financially that would curtail its growth or limit its kind of aspirations and the like. And it's been incredibly disciplined doing that. And it's had a series of leaders, not just presidents, but other leaders and faculty who are all committed to that. And it takes everybody aspiring to it. But a couple of other things. I mean, when it comes to being a place that is accessible, that is affordable to students, it involves starting colleges like Arupe College. It involves having wonderful partners like Hope Chicago and being one of their priority partners. It means reaching out a lot. But also, you know, long term, as we go forward, you know, if I were sitting here on a panel with my colleagues from the other private universities, and even the public universities here in Chicago, they would talk about the importance of the philanthropic community and philanthropic efforts to do this. We cannot put all of our aspirations on the backs of students and families. And so increasing our success from a fundraising capacity and being as competitive as we can with every federal grant opportunity that's out there, that's how we do it. And there's certainly more, but those are the most obvious ones to me anyway.
Absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about some sports.
I love to talk about sports.
All right. So everyone should know Loyola competes in Division I sports and is a member of the Atlantic 10 Conference. You serve on the NCAA Division I's Board of Directors and its finance committees. And I think everyone has heard in the past few years, college athletics has gone through some dynamic changes from NIL to transfer portal to conference realignment. So can you talk to us about how Loyola is navigating that new environment and how does Division I athletics fit into the educational mission of Loyola?
Sure. You know, when you asked this question, it reminded me of your first question and sort of your background. So I've been fortunate to, at three different universities, to have direct oversight of Division I athletic programs since 2004. So that's 20 years now. And I've seen a lot of changes during that time. And there's usually a lot of, I will call it sometimes, hysteria around some of those changes. Very few things generate the type of emotional reaction that college sports or sports in general can generate, right? And I believe wholeheartedly in the importance and the impact and the power of college athletics. So much of what we see is really about college football and the issues that you talked about, to a lesser extent college basketball, and not really the reality for most everybody else. But nonetheless, to those issues, and they have changed, all the reasons that you cited, from my perspective, you have to stay true to who you are and not try to be something that you are not. And so, I just had this conversation with somebody recently from another university. Was talking about how much their institution, through the various mechanisms, are investing in NIL opportunities for their student athletes. And they said, well, you at Loyola must be doing X, Y, or Z. And I wasn't going to disclose, but I thought, no, we're not. Okay, yes, we're participating, and we're not preventing opportunities to our student athletes for all of those things, and we're facilitating where we can. But there's so much more that goes into creating a winning culture and a winning program than simply dollars and cents that go to student athletes. I know our basketball coach, Drew Valentine, is here, and part of the reason why players choose to come to a place like Loyola, and choose, more importantly now in this day and age, to stay at a place like Loyola, because really the reality is after one good season, somebody could be poached. It's a free agent system, but the reason they stay is really cultural, for how else to define it. So making sure that our culture and how we embrace our student athletes, help develop them, and support them is really how we deal with it. I do sit on the Division I Board of Directors. I've been there now for a little more than a year representing our conference. And sitting in the room with colleagues from the University of Georgia, the University of Utah, or other Power Four now conference institutions, I can tell you that they're at a loss for how to sometimes address these institutions. These are major universities with almost professional sports franchises attached to them. Okay, at Loyola, that's not the case. I don't think it will ever be the case. But from my vantage point, we just keep doing what we're doing. And I'd be remiss if I didn't remind everyone that as we've been doing what we've been doing, we're still the only university in Illinois that's ever won the national championship at basketball. And the only one to have been to the Final Four and the Sweet 16 in the last 10 years. So we must be doing something right.
All right, we're going to shift a little bit and talk about students. So tell us about what's the role that universities play in helping students navigate this moment we have of political, social, and cultural polarization?
Well, I mean, I think universities become a focal point for a lot of people. There's a lot of hope and aspirations and expectations and demands on universities to deliver in this regard for a variety of reasons. I mean, we, in some respects, we do it to ourselves. We hold ourselves up as kind of being these ivory towers, these places where you can kind of retreat from the world and kind of rise above it all. We're also expensive. And so people want to see a return on that particular investment. But I think we do it in a variety of ways. And a school like Loyola, at Loyola, I talked about this in some of my opening remarks, it's part and parcel of our mission and who and what we are. So when difficult issues arise, and they do, and they have forever, and they will continue for forever, we go right to our mission. And what is our mission? Say that we are, and that's what we attempt to do. Again, conversations with some of my colleagues from other universities, when we talk about this, they often will come back and say, gosh, you have such an advantage because of your mission, because of your identity. You have a place to start the conversation. And it's imperfect, but it at least gives us an opportunity to start a conversation in a collaborative way as opposed to an adversarial way. And a few other things, that I think are important. I mean, our student body is incredibly diverse, as I mentioned. And so being attentive to that diversity is incredibly important. In addition to our, expected campus ministry staff that you would think a Jesuit Catholic institution would have, we have a full-time Muslim chaplain. We have a full-time Jewish chaplain. One of the best student events I went to in my first month, my first year at Loyola, was this annual dinner that our Jewish students and our Hindu students host together, right? I'm using these examples because these are obviously some of the more, pressing tensions of our time. But, when
you think about diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. And unfortunately, that's become a political punching bag, right, in many respects. For us, it flows naturally from our mission. Okay, it just does. And so we're not necessarily trying to do something new. We might use different language to describe it. We might have greater focus, greater attention, and be more successful as a result of that. But as I said, this mission's been here for a long time. It's going to outlive us, and that's what we lean on.
Love it. All right. I think I have time for one more question. You teased this one up, so I'm going to ask it.
Sure.
Okay. So Loyola has emerged as a leader in the study and the solutions for environmental and sustainability plus human climate change. Can you tell us a little bit about the global and local impact of that commitment?
Yes, and I joke that Loyola has been doing things for the environment before it was cool to do it for the environment. That's not original to me. That was said to me by a few different people. The first thing I think of in response to your question is what is known as one of the apostolic preferences of the Jesuits. And in fact, now that I think about it even further, another apostolic preference is very relevant to your previous question. So the Jesuits, the Society of Jesus, the order that founded Loyola University Chicago and continues to animate our identity and our mission, established a few years ago apostolic preferences, essentially to guide the work of the Jesuits around the world. And one of the four is care for our common home. Okay. There's a lot more words to describe it, but that's the bumper sticker, care for our common home. By the way, the one that I thought of, which relates to your previous question, is accompanying young people and journeying with young people on a hope-filled future.
Okay.
Yeah. I think part of our job is to remind our students that the future is hope-filled, and we have to model that. But specifically to this question, care for a common home. And so, you know, Loyola did establish a School of Environmental Sustainability several years ago, and in doing so, planted a flag in the ground. We know from the data that our incoming students report that Loyola's commitments to sustainability and environmental stewardship and the like are important to them. It's one of the things that attracts them to them. I haven't been on campus, as I've noted, that long, and we've had the earth dug up a few different times. I ask, what's going on there? And it's all underground storage for water to deal with runoff and other kinds of issues like that. We're buying all of our power from renewable energy sources. I mean, those are kind of clear, demonstrable ways. But I think equally important, if not more important in the long term, is the infusion of environmental sustainability and stewardship into the curriculum and across the curriculum. So I mentioned Pope Francis before. One of Pope Francis's initiatives is an initiative called Laudato Si, which is about caring for the environment. And he challenged institutions around the world to develop plans to support these principles. And I had a meeting over the summer with one of our faculty members who led that effort. And it was just tremendous to see that of the, you know, 6, 7, 8 pages of the plan that he provided, yes, things about the facilities were listed and the like, but 80% of those pages was filled with academic and programmatic initiatives that will educate students and make those connections and help the student in my applied calculus class realize that actually something here can relate to something in a broader sense that's much more important in telling to them. So to me, it's about the academic program always. We're a university first and foremost, and making sure that faculty are engaged across those priorities.
All right. Well, thank you, President Reed. We're going to transition to the Q&As. Yep, so staff,
I have a question. I'll grab it.
All right, I'm going to start with my first one. Am I supposed to say who the question's from? No? Yes, you want me to? Okay, be honest. All right. All right, Meg, you're up first. So how is Loyola a citizen of Chicago? And how does the university provide scaled involvement for its students within the city? And she also added, P.S., go Ramblers. My son is a proud Loyola freshman this fall.
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I mean, we're wholly, our undergraduates in particular, I mean, we're wholly located within the city of Chicago. So our students live, study, recreate, socialize, you name it, in the city of Chicago. All of our freshmen and sophomores, they live on campus. Our juniors and seniors, they live close to campus. And obviously, of course, you know, our commuting students, you know, come from Chicago. That's who they are. Okay. And, you know, so I think sometimes anecdotes can help. We have one of the coolest traditions at the beginning of the year where one of our professors takes our students on a overnight bike tour of the neighborhoods of Chicago. And literally, they all get on bikes, they ride through the neighborhoods, and he takes them around, and he shows them around. I mean, we tell students from day one, this is your home, and we want you to engage, and they do, okay? Service opportunities are another way in which, you know, that happens in spades. And both service opportunities that are purely you know, extra to what students are doing in the classroom or their other activities, and other service opportunities that are very particular to it. And then, you know, additionally, you know, I think one of the greatest services and one of the greatest examples of Loyola being a citizen to Chicago in, and really Cook County more generally, is our criminal justice program. Yep. And some of the work that we have there on criminal justice reform and the studies that our faculty have been doing with regards to bail reform and other, you know, changes to sentencing guidelines and the like. I mean, they're providing the data to either validate the policies that exist or to suggest changes in the future. So, I mean, those are the opportunities that come to mind.
All right. We have a question from Dorothy. It aligns exactly what the professor was doing. So are you willing to collaborate with your immediate Rogers Park and Edgewater neighbors to make a better plan for the university and the neighborhood?
I'm sorry, was the first part of that question was?
Are you willing to collaborate with your immediate Rogers Park and Edgewater neighbors?
Absolutely. I think Loyola has always wanted to be a good neighbor to where it is. You know, universities, we're physically present, all right? You don't pick up campuses typically and move them. You know, that can happen. I mean, the university was founded where St. Ignatius College Prep was in 1870 and, you know, in the early 1900s moved to Rogers Park, but we're not picking it up and moving it anywhere. Same thing with the Water Tower campus or the Health Sciences campus. So the vibrancy and the desirability and the conditions of our neighborhoods are of vital importance to us. So we absolutely, you know, want to do that. There inherently are tensions in this. And you know, that's something that has to be worked through. But we have a vested interest in our neighborhoods and in their future. And so, of course, we want to be partners in that.
Okay. All right. So we have a question from Kwame. Do you feel that there's a need to navigate away from using the nomenclature of diversity, equity, and inclusion? Is there danger in doing so?
Mm-hmm. Sorry. You had an easier question? Well, no, I don't think there's a need to, but I think we have to recognize that for some people, that language is a weapon. And therefore, you got to know what you're engaging with. I mean, that's why I've said at Loyola in particular, you cannot be a Jesuit Catholic university without having a commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. So if we can be more successful doing that work by focusing more on the mission end of the language than on the what I would call the contemporary, you know, acronyms, then I'm a practical person, and I think, you know, let's do that. But I think the risk there, of course, is to just abandon the work. And that, I think, is concerning. You know, I'm 50 years old. I graduated from college in 1996. And I can remember as an undergraduate of my institution, at that time, a racial incident happening on campus. Somebody wrote something really inappropriate on a poster or something on campus. And campus rallied around that and the like. And at that time, the lingo was multicultural relations, multicultural affairs. And that, you know, survived for a long time. And then, as I saw the work change at institutions, it evolved into the diversity programs, diversity initiatives, and institutional diversity, student diversity, and then, you know, DEI, and even DEI. I mean, DEIB, yeah. You know, and there's others as well. So, you know, again, I'm a practical person, and I just think, as long as we are committed to the core and the true essence of the work, in some respects, I'd say call whatever's necessary to get the job done. But at the same time, I don't like to concede, in particular when I think somebody's just weaponizing something.
Absolutely. I'm going to apologize for pronouncing their name incorrectly, but it looks like it's Jadonis. And so their question, two-part question for you. So we'll go one part. First part. How did you know that this mission was what you wanted to do? Was it a specific moment, your inner compass, or a combination of things?
Well, in some respects, I guess I didn't have a choice. I was sent to a Jesuit high school at the age of 14. So it's something that I just experienced. And it had a tremendous impact on my life. I think all of us, if we close our eyes and reflect, can think of teachers, mentors, coaches, advisors, guidance counselors, whomever, that impacted your life. And if you really said, okay, but maybe there's a dozen of them, but who are the two or three? You know, you can think of those, and I can name those people at different points in my life. And so I feel a sense of responsibility to give back in that regard. So that's kind of where it came from.
So part two for you is, and this is from a sophomore at Loyola, just so you understand the context. So what advice would you give young people just starting out in their careers/professional journeys?
I would say don't put too much pressure on yourself. I just think there's so much pressure that I see our young people facing, and it's coming from a variety of sources. I do believe that if you become an educated person and learn how to be independent, think critically, communicate well, access resources, etc., the results will flow. The first job that you have is not going to be your last job. I was a high school teacher. Okay. How did I go from that to sitting here today? Right. Some of it had nothing to do with anything I did. It was actually actions that other people took. It was the invitations that other people extended and those opportunities. So along with the advice of not putting too much pressure on myself is you have to put yourself in positions to have opportunities. So, you know, we always tell undergraduates in particular to get involved, to get engaged. Why? Not only so you benefit from the experience, but because you're going to meet other people who are going to become so impactful in our lives. We inherently are relational people. And I think one of the challenges that I see with our young people, particularly those, you know, who spent, you know, unfortunately, as part of their high school years going through COVID, is they kind of got used to disengagement, and getting them to be re-engaged is so darn incredibly important. So those are some of the pieces of advice I would give to that young person. If you want to know more, see me afterwards, and I'll try to help you out.
All right. We'll call up Dan here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, President Reed. It's always fun.
Thank you, Omar. Great. We hope to have you back. Nice job of asking all the right questions. Thank you, Dr. Reed. Thank you for, I noted, teaching them how to think, but not what to think. Today, there's a debate tonight, if anybody hasn't heard. And during this politically divisive time, that couldn't be more important, right? So thank you for all your efforts. Thank you for being here at City Club. We have a host of great programs coming up tomorrow, the next day. And tomorrow it's on guns with the Illinois State Police and the ATF, the head of the special agent in charge of the ATF. We've got Kerry Steele from MWRD on Thursday. Next week we've got Speaker Chris Welch. We've got the Park District, Rosa Escareño, superintendent. So many great programs. If you liked what you heard today, please come back. I know we'll see many familiar faces in the room again. Janice Jackson, Mary Dempsey, Lester McKeever. It's such an amazing group of people that Rick Estrada that we didn't even recognize earlier. So thank you again all for being here. Thank you, Dr. Reed, for all you're doing. We're going to be right alongside you during this journey, and we look forward to having all of you back at City Club soon. And feel free to go forth and set the world on fire, right? Thank you.